Hi, it's February 20th, and I think this is the 14th class, and we're starting with section 2 of Derech Hashem. So I'm glad you're here, Gila. So nice. I'm doing the call from Yerushalayim, from the Ner La'Elef office. Okay, so we finished all of part 1 last week, and basically part 1 is a review. Just to review that, I'm just looking at the table of contents for a quick review. So we discussed the Creator. We discussed the purpose of creation. We discussed man, which included free will, body and soul, effort and reward, the world to come, the first sin, before that sin, power of the soul, the results of that sin, death and the world's destruction, different levels of reward, the world of souls, experiences of the disembodied soul, and resurrection. And we talked about human responsibility, man's nature and environment, the physical world and the use of the world, the commandments and awareness of God, and finally, the spiritual realm, physical and the spiritual, and we discussed at length forces and angels, and transcendental forces, determinism and indeterminism, and the effects of man's deeds, interaction with free will, forces of good and evil, the root of evil, and good and evil concepts. So those are the subheadings. So basically, all of Section 1 is really discussing the fundamentals of the universe without discussing their dynamic parts. It's just setting us up so that we can now discuss how things work within that. So so now we're going to start with Hashgacha Pratis and Hashgacha Klalas, the Inyan Hashgacha Toyit Barach Shemo Bechlal. So providence in general is the first part of Section 2 and how that dynamic relationship works. Gila, before we continue, do you have any questions on previous parts? I know you still have the question on full, which we still have to get back to you on. But hopefully by next time, because I'm here in Israel, I'll be able to sit down with people and clarify some of those things just to make sure. Do you have any other questions?
Well, I wanted to clarify something. Can you hear me? Yeah. So this is in terms of the concept about the four, the letters of Hashem's name, Yud, He, Vav, right? So is it right to say that the Yud is would classify the inspiration, the He would be the receiving part, the Vav would be the work, and then the final He would be transcendence?
I think so. It's you're breaking up just a drop, so it's hard for me to hear all the words that you're saying. But yes, that the yud is the causative energy. Yud and the vav are both causative energies, and he are both receiving energies. But that yud being the initial thought, so to speak, or the initial idea, and then the he receiving that and transforming that, but then creating a causative energy in that also. So ma'aseh b'machshava techila. So you have to start with a machshava, but that first machshava is just the inspiration. You have to think it out a little bit too. So that would be the first he is really expanding in the thought realm what it is, so to speak. And this is all a mushel because it applies in many different ways. And then that expanded thought or causativity becoming, the expanded thought becoming then causative rather than receptive in the vav. And then the hey receiving that causal energy. And the transcendence, I think, is really the whole name altogether or beyond, because the yud and the hey and the vav and the hey together. So transcendence is the sum of the parts that exceeds the parts. That's really what transcendence is. So if you just think about it in the easiest scenario to think about so clearly, father, mother, baby. So father and his contribution, right, so he has a very quick and easy contribution to make one cell, and it doesn't take long to make that contribution. And then the mother receiving that contribution and the expansion over a protracted amount of time. And then the baby is the transcendence. It's the sum of both. A baby can't exist without the father's gift or the mother's energy and all that expansion of time and space. But once the baby is born, it's neither, but it's both, and it's more than both.
Right. So where I'm getting a little bit stuck is I can understand when you have, two people working together, but, if you have one person working on something, what would be, the first hit, right? let's say, you know, someone has an idea or they have an inspiration and they do it and whatever, and then it becomes real. So what would be that first hey in that sort of process?
Well, so let's just think, I mean, in our own selves, let's just take making Shabbos, right? So you think to yourself, Wednesday night, oh, Shabbos is coming. That's the yud, right? It's the first idea. But then you have to think, oh, okay, I have to make Shabbos. This is the hey, now receiving that first thought inside you. So what do I want? What menu am I going to make? What do I need for Shabbos? Do I need to hire extra help? Do I need to make sure that the help that I hired is coming? Do I need to create a grocery list? Do I need to go shopping? Do I have all the ingredients in the house? What do I need? What, you know, depending on the time that I have, you know, how do I want to cut this list down or build this list up, the guests that I have coming? Okay, so now you have your piece of paper in front of you. Even if it's not a piece of paper, even if it's just in your head, but you've expanded upon and clarified your thoughts. That's the hey, the expansion of it. And now that becomes causal, the vav. So now you have to make phone calls, and you have to get in your car, and you have to go shopping, and you have to bring home groceries. And now you have all the ingredients, whatever they are, the guests that you have confirmed, and the help that you have confirmed, and the groceries that you've bought and brought home. And now you have to put it all together. You still have to work with it. It's just because you bought it doesn't mean that you have food on the table. So now you have to transform all that raw ingredients. Even let's say you have help coming to the house that you called, right? But you still have to tell her what to do. And, you know, this laundry needs to be folded, and that tablecloth goes on the table, and skip this part of the house and focus on that part of the house and make sure that this gets done, right? So there's all the directing and the expansion of the concept until it's Shabbos. You light candles, and it's all done. The food is ready. The house is clean. And it's more than everything. It's more than that first thought, and it's more than the grocery shop, and it's more than your cooking. It's Shabbos.
Right. Yeah, no, that explains it.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. Okay, you ready to go on to part two?
I am. I'm going to go on mute just because I've got my kids with me and I don't want it to. Like,
okay, no problem.
Recording, but,
no problem.
So, like, if
feel free to jump in at any time.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. All right, so we're going to start with Providence in general, Chapter 1 and Part 2. So first I'll just read this paragraph. It's evident that everything that exists, both above and below, was created only because the highest wisdom deemed these phenomena necessary and useful for furthering the purpose of creation as a whole. The natural laws and properties of each created thing were ordained by the highest wisdom to perfectly fit the role that each thing plays in the general scheme. That's basically the review of the entire last section in just a few sentences. But everything that we learned about in the last section, everything that's put into place, was put into place specifically to fill a specific and certain role that would create the exactly perfect arena in which mankind could function. So that each thing has its own exact role that it plays in the general scheme of things. Since each thing was initially created for a purpose, it is appropriate that it be maintained as long as it is serving its purpose. So God created all things. He continues to oversee them and maintain them in the state that he desires. So in this paragraph, we have both the concepts of where Shabbos comes from, Zecher L'Maaseh Breishit, and Zecher L'Yetziat Mitzrayim. I personally used to wonder, why do we say Zecher L'Yetziat Mitzrayim so often? I mean, we have a lot of important experiences as a people, and we keep talking about Mitzrayim again and again and again and again. Finally, I'm just revealing my own ignorance, finally the question was answered, I don't know how many years ago, when these two things were explained to me. So Zecher L'Maaseh Breishit, Hashem created the whole world. There's nobody there to witness it. Nobody saw it. It was a private act. Hashem brought everything into being. But that was in setting up the world for us to exist in. Whereas Zecher L'Yetziat Mitzrayim, the Yetziat Mitzrayim is the experience of all of us experiencing Hashem's mastery of the world, Jews and non-Jews. Each one of the 10 plagues parallels one of the Ma'amarei Breishit, the parallel and opposite. I don't remember if I mentioned that before in this shiur, and I still haven't learned. I think it's Zil Nagon on Pirkei Avos where it discusses the 10 Ma'amarei Breishit, that's where he discusses how the plagues parallel them. So it's on my list of things to learn, but the I can do the first two just from memory, and those are pretty easy to see. The other ones are harder to see. But if you think about the first one, was Breshit. That's the first Ma'amar, in the beginning, right? The rest are Vayomers. But the first one is Breshit, so the beginning. And the last of the 10 plagues is the death of the firstborn. So they're both firsts that parallel each other and opposite. And then the second Ma'amar Breshit is Let There Be Light. And the second to the last plague is Choshech, darkness. So that each plague parallels in opposite order one of the sayings of Breshit. So that's to show that Hashem runs the whole world every level. That's what the plagues were about. And that's why it was important for Hashem to harden Paro's heart so that Aleph, so that his free will could be maintained, which we discussed a little bit in the free will section, but really Bet, so that the whole world could see that Hashem rules everything on every level, so that his dominion over the world could be demonstrated in front of everybody. But it's not just that it's demonstrated, but that it's continuing. So that's the key point here, is that not just that Hashem created everything, but that he's mashgiach on everything. He watches out for it, and he not just watches out, but he actually continues it all the time. Nothing could exist without Hashem's constant energizing of that thing. So that's the concept of Zecher Le'etzei Mitzrayim, is that Hashem continues to energize. Every single one of the forces that he created in Ma'aseh Breshit, he continues to power in a dynamic way today. So it's not even that he just set it up and then created a battery for everything so it would keep running, but there's a constant interactive dynamic interplay between Hashem and the world on every level. So that's what this is. That's what Hashgacha is that we're going to see. Okay, paragraph 2. As we have discussed earlier, the beginnings of all created things are the transcendental forces. Of course, that's after Hashem thinks of it. All physical things result from them, and all their details are a consequence of what is reflected to them by these forces, following their own detailed qualities. There is nothing large or small in the physical world that does not have its cause and origin among some aspect of these forces. So, as we discussed in the part before, and it references it here, part 1, section 5, paragraph 3, the transcendental forces are the first place, it would really be, in a way, the Yud. Perhaps it's the Vav, I'm not sure, I'm not going to commit to that. But anyway, it would be the causative, one of the causative energies is the transcendental forces. That Hashem gives that thought into what should exist, and then from that is created the transcendental forces, so the kolchot, and that's what is the beginning of all things, and then from there, it descends down many different levels through the spherot, through the different olamot, whatever it is, until it becomes manifest into the physical world that we see through different channels. But it starts out in the transcendental forces. Nothing exists without it starting there. Not large and not small, and then it continues through all the different levels. The one who oversees all these concepts is God himself, and he does so in the same way that he created them. Accordingly, he first oversees the array of the transcendental forces and everything that results from their essential nature. He then supervises the angelic agents who are appointed to maintain the existence and function of all that exists, giving them power to do their tasks. So Hashem powers each level, each separate level of the forces down to the malachim, down to the manifestation, down to here we are, each one of us, each level on its own. Let's see. So we have this concept, and this would be hashgacha klalit. And for here I am going to read some of the Hebrew, just of what we just read in the English. V'Adon Baruch Hu, Hinei Hu Mashgiach Al Kol Elah Ha'inyanim. So Hashem is Mashgiach. So we want to look at that word, Mashgiach. Kasi Masha Bar'am, the way that he created them. Dehainu Al HaKochot HaNivdalim B'Rishana, on the different types of forces that were there in the beginning. V'Al Kol Hishtal Shalutam Kasi Masha and on all their hishtal shalut, I guess it would be descending, how does he translate it? Well, that which flows forth from it, according to its quality limit. V'chein hu mashgiach gam kein al ha'pkidim she'hifkid al ha'nimtzot k'mo she'zechanu sham. So Hashem is mashgiach on the upper forces and then on the pkidim, on the agents. In modern Hebrew, pkid is a secretary. That which carries out the work of the boss. That's really what a secretary is. So pkid here, pkidim. Hashem is mashgiach on them too. So what does hashgacha mean? So it does mean oversight or to see, but it's not just seeing. It's an actual interaction. So I would venture to translate hashgacha, both hashgacha klalit and hashgacha pratit, which we'll differentiate soon, as the mechanism through which Hashem interacts in the world. So Hashem did create everything, but then there's a dynamic interaction of Hashem with his creatures and his creations. And that's through the mechanism of hashgacha. So we have two different types of hashgacha, hashgacha klali and hashgacha prati, which I guess we'll differentiate after we do this third paragraph. The human race, however, is different from all other species, since it was given free will and the ability to involve itself with both perfection and deficiency. Man is therefore an active, moving influence and not something that is merely acted upon. So we discussed that at length when we discussed the parable of the marionette, that not only does the energy flow from above, as it does for everything in the entire creation, the energy flows from above and affects what's below, but that mankind can then send energy back up. But not only does mankind send energy back up, as we discussed, for instance, in how a person could daven for another, how that might work, how one person's tefillah could affect another, in that they send energy back up those energetic streams, and it shifts the energies, shifts the way energy works in Shemaim, and then sends it back down differently. But it also doesn't just send it back down to others, it sends it back down to oneself differently. And therefore, the energy flow is constantly dynamic, always changing, depending on the energy that we send up. And I don't remember if I quoted this part of this pasuk last time, but that's one of the ideas in Hashem Tzilcha, as it says in Tehillim, that Hashem is our shadow. Hashem follows us. So it doesn't mean, of course, Hashem is our literal shadow. He's not bound to follow us like a shadow is. A shadow has to. But rather that Hashem has chosen to shadow us, meaning we get to initiate. Once Hashem set up the world, he put us in it and allows us to initiate the pathways so that the way that we behave, that's the way that others can behave toward us and that Hashem behaves toward us. So that we create channels of pleasantness or stringency or harshness or anger or vatranut. Depending on how we behave, we open those channels up. And it's through those channels that we open with our behavior that Hashem then behaves towards us. Okay, the providence dealing with man must therefore also be different from that concerning other species. In the case of man, it must oversee and scrutinize every detail of his activities and bring about things that are the result of his ways and the fruit of his deeds. Each one of a person's deeds, as well as their results, are scrutinized, and providence is then extended to him in the particular manner that suits their consequences, and the individual is judged measure for measure, as will be discussed in a later chapter. So this is the concept, really, of mida keneged mida, that measure for measure, because of the direct interaction that Hashem has with us and the way that he, so to speak, stepped out of the way to allow us to lead, so that the way that we behave creates a reality through which Hashem has chosen to enter, to behave towards us. So if that's the case, if Hashem does then behave towards us through the channels that we create, that means Hashem has to examine and know what those channels are. Examine every deed, every thought, every word, and determine what channel that created and then behave toward us in those channels. That's why it's mida, keneged mida. Everything that we do is measured is decided upon to understand what is this channel, how wide is it, how narrow is it, how constricted is it, how much of a flow can get through here. That's the meaning of Mida, Keneged Mida. This is not true, however, of any other species other than man. The members of other species are acted upon and have no influence themselves. They merely exist to maintain the species as a whole, according to the nature of its spiritual root. Providence is thus merely extended to maintain the root and its branches, according to the inherent nature and function of that root. So for all other species, there is a malach that's in charge, a spiritual energy that's in charge of the entire species. It doesn't mean that the entire species, that each individual in the species doesn't get energized individually by Hashem. It does. No cow could munch grass, and no mountain lion could prey upon whatever they prey upon, without Hashem powering that individual lion to pounce at that exact moment. So Hashgacha Klalos doesn't mean that Hashem just battery charges a whole species and it just runs on its own. But what it means is that the species itself is maintained through a Klali way. Every individual in the species is only maintained because of the energy of the species. So let's say, for instance, I think black panthers, but don't trip me up on the science, but I think black panthers are an endangered species right now, and that they're the too few that are left are genetically very similar to each other. So because of the lack of diversity, they won't be able to last long, Derech HaTeva. Just going to close the door, this person opened. So that the Hashgacha Klali over the entire species is that the species shouldn't last long. Well, we'll see what happens as human beings interact with it. But the Hashgacha Klali would just be that each one of those mountain lions should have whatever genetic package it has, is because it's possible, I'm not saying for sure, that the species is not long for this world and it's going to end soon, because that's the Hashgacha of the species. But still, each individual Black Panther today has is personally energized by Hashem. That's Hashgacha Klalos, because it's not dynamic. It's not that an individual panther will be saved, let's say, from extinction or whatever.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Okay, somebody has to fix up the room while I'm teaching. Okay, I'll just try to focus. Let's see what I'm saying. So each individual animal still is powered by Hashem, even though the species is maintained by one angelic agent. Each animal is powered on an individual level, but just so that the entire species can exist, as opposed to mankind, which has its own, each human being has its own individual hashgacha, dependent on how they interact. So let's just see this last paragraph here. Human beings, on the other hand, act and exert influence as individuals. They therefore require individual providence, and everything must be the result of their deeds, no more and no less. We'll expand upon this in the following chapters. Just before we continue in the next chapter, I want to mention that it's interesting to see the interplay between Hashgacha Klalos and Hashgacha Pratis in one particular realm, which is familiar to me anyway. So as a dog owner, while dogs have a general Hashgacha, they have Hashgacha Klalos, an individual dog, again, only has Hashgacha Klalos in terms of the species and the existence of the species, unless it's owned by or interacts with a human being. Once it's in the realm of a human being, let's just say a sheep dog, right? So a shepherd has a dog that helps protect those sheep against wolves. So then that dog does enjoy a certain level of Hashgacha Pratis, because it's in the realm, because it's influenced by the the circle of hashgacha pratis of the human being. The shepherd, according to his behavior, creates a circle around him, so to speak, of hashgacha pratis that dog then enters. And then the shepherd, depending on his level of hashgacha pratis, would have general... it's very distracting, and people come in. Sorry. The shepherd, according to his level of energy, would exert an influence on that dog. And then the dog, for instance, let's say the dog wouldn't get torn apart by a wolf in a certain time because it wasn't appropriate for the shepherd to experience that loss. Not that the dog matters necessarily in the hashgacha klali of the whole species, and that a dog could easily replace that dog. But in the experience of the shepherd, another dog can't easily replace that dog, and therefore an individually owned animal, or let's say tree even, or crop, whatever it is, once it's connected to a human being, will enjoy a slightly higher level of hashgacha because of the influence of the human being that it interplays with. Okay, I'm pausing here in case you have any questions before I start chapter 2, because that's just basically an introduction to hashgacha. Okay, so that's hashgacha as an introduction, and so now we're going to start chapter 2 of section 2, Man in This World. We've stated earlier that the purpose of the creation of the human species is that man should become worthy of attaining true good, namely being drawn close to him in the world to come. Hence, the ultimate end of all his evolvements is the tranquility in the world to come. I wanted to see that in the Hebrew evolvements. V'nimtza shesof kol gilgulav, hinehu hamenucha le'olam haba. That all the evolving that we do, everything that we are involved in, the cycles that we go through and the processes that we engage in, is all to lead us toward Olam Haba. On the plane to Israel, I read the book Tuesdays with Mori, which I recommend if anybody has a chance to read. It's a fast read, really the story of basically a semester-long decline of a professor, Mori Schwartz, and his student writes, visits him while he's dying of Lou Gehrig's disease, of ALS. In the end of his life, he visits him every Tuesday, flies to visit him. And he writes a different life lesson for each one of the Tuesdays that he visits him. One of the things that the professor says is that if you learn how to die, you learn how to live. So it is actually the quality of understanding what we're here for and where our direction is that helps us understand how we actually live. So that's what this is saying, that this whole world is a prose door, la'olam haba. The whole purpose of this world is only to add us to the next world. I think I'm going to end the class early just because it's very distracting in this room, so I'm just going to go a little bit further. The highest wisdom decreed, however, that this would be best attained if man was first exist in the present world, bound and limited by its natural laws. This is actually the true and proper preparation necessary for the desired goal, and everything in this world is therefore arranged so that it should serve as a means for preparing and readying man for this ultimate purpose. So the entire world, as we discussed in the first section of the book, everything was created so that mankind could exist, so that there would be a theater of behavior, a place for people to exercise their free will and be able to move through experiences in the physical to be able to change their spiritual nature through the experience in the physical. That's what the whole world is for. So this entire world is for that. And I think that does, people will end on this, and I think it makes it easier to move through parenting, to move through working, to move through other relationships, marriage, whatever it is, if we can really pan back and get the Google Earth view of our life, really move far, far back and get the satellite picture that it's not about the day-to-day. The day-to-day is where we accomplish, but it's not about what we accomplish in the day-to-day. It's about how we use the day-to-day to accomplish the ultimate goal of soul transformation so that we become the kli that Hashem can then give to so that we can receive as much menucha in the world to come, that we use this entire world as that proper prose door, each experience that we have. So I think that's a good idea to end on for this week, is how can we use this world as a proper prose door, understanding or just even noticing that this world is all arranged for that, to just to notice what's around us, how from the weather to our children to our spouses to the grocery store to the traffic, everything, how it's all arranged so that we can use it to prepare ourselves. La'olam haba. That this is just a stage. As I read this on the plane, I was just thinking about this world. Israel Tabor talks about this world as a gestation world, that we are really gestating our future selves. We give birth to ourselves when we die. We give birth to our neshama. So I was thinking about that there's a passive gestational stage from the time of conception, and then there's birth, that transition. But in a way, the first year of a baby is still gestating outside the womb. And in a way, there's still a gestation probably till age 4 or 5, until 6 maybe, till a child starts to take charge a little bit of their lives. But it's a phase that we move through. We don't require a demise and then, or even that huge transition of birth. We don't require in between the ages of, like, let's say, later childhood and early adulthood, where we do start to actively gestate ourselves. So I'd say that we, those who are listening to this call, are in a phase of active self-gestation. How can we gestate ourselves through all the means of this world to create the self that we want to be able to give birth to at the end of this entire process? How can we use this world to create that? So, okay, I think we'll end on that. Gila, do you have any questions before I end? Okay, so I'm ending on that for this weekend. And B'ezrat Hashem, next week at the same time, while I'm still in Israel, and I'll find a different room to give the class from so that we won't be interrupted. Thanks so much, and talk to you later. Have a great week. Bye-bye.